Coach Linda Blade on her fight to save women's sports. I'm Sheila Gunn Reid, and you're watching The Gunn Show. Today's show is a real treat for me, and I hope it's a real treat for you also. I get to interview someone who's a bit of a personal hero. You see, today's guest is Coach Linda Blade. She's a coach, as I've indicated a couple of times already, but she's also a Canadian track and field champion. She's a kinesiologist. She's the former president of Athletics Alberta, and she's an accomplished author, and she's a humanitarian. And she was one of the early warriors in the fight to save women's sports. She could see all the madness that lay before us as men compete as women for the purposes of rugby, MMA, swimming. I mean, name the sport and there's a dude trying to play it masquerading as a woman. And she saw these problems right away when sporting associations began to adopt policies of allowing men to self-identify as women for, and these are my words, not hers, the purposes of gender cheating. In fact, Linda wrote a book called Unsporting. It's published by Rebel News. It's available at unsporting.com. The book Unsporting, How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport, predicted many of the things going on in society right now, because Linda, she's an expert in the human body as a kinesiologist. She understands the difference between male and female physiology, and she understood that feelings could not change reality, and she joins me now in an interview we recorded yesterday morning. Now is my new friend, although someone I met before and I've always been a fan of, Coach Linda Blade. She's a kinesiologist, the head of Athletics Alberta, an author, and an advocate for sex-based rights. I mean, I guess it started in sports for you, but it spilled over from that. We were at an event with April Hutchinson over the weekend, and I thought, as I was talking to you, I thought, man, I would read an autobiography by Linda Blade. And so
I've had quite a life.
So I had to talk to you more, but let's talk about the most top of mind thing. So What's happening in Alberta with our Premier Daniel Smith, I think exhibiting the common sense position on the best way to both foster inclusion, but protect the rights of women and girls, but also boys and men.
Yes. Well, okay. First, just a small correction. I should have told you, I'm no longer president of Athletics Alberta.
Yeah.
That was about a year ago. I moved on because I was doing something with Conservative Party of Canada and I needed to change arenas, so to speak. But anyway, so yes, with respect to Premier Daniel Smith, I think she has woken up earlier than other premiers, although, you know, Premier Higgs in New Brunswick and Scott Moe, like they all indicated they were concerned about the children. But as far as women's sports, Premier Daniel Smith should be congratulated for being the first premier to literally come out and say, we understand there's a competitive advantage that men have in women's sports, that male bodies have in women's sports. And so we need to start working on guidelines in Alberta that draw sex-based boundaries around sports so that every sport has at least one category that's female only. Now, she's indicating there can be other categories like mixed sex categories and co-ed and male. But I think as far as the way it helps men and boys is that neither women nor men want to have the opposite sex person in their spaces, if they can help it, especially the private spaces. And so allowing people, you know, I know the premier has said something a little bit questionable about bathrooms and locker rooms and stuff. So just the other day, but I think they are still beta testing all these ideas. And I just think that the conclusion is going to be reached that at some point you need strict sex-based boundaries in certain contexts.
Now, you and I were talking that you were sort of one of the first people to sound the alarm bells. I don't think you had a crystal ball. I think you have a crystal mind. And I think a lot of it has to do with your background in kinesiology. I mean, you're an expert in the mechanics of the human body. And yet when you were first raising these issues, you were sort of being told to, it's never going to be as bad as you're telling us it's going to be. What was that like?
Well, it was surreal, I guess. When I first woke up to it, I was president of Athletics Alberta, and I was sitting at a national meeting where all the presidents of the provinces were sitting around a table in a meeting room. And this was 2018, and we were basically told, our new policy is going to have to be that anybody can self-identify that. And to me, and of course I asked about it, it means any male, no matter the age, can self-identify into women's sports, the girls' sports, girls or women teams or races. And, I told them, I said, guys, we know the truth. Look at any record, Olympic, world, national, provincial, school record. We all know the difference between male and female. And all you're doing here is saying that if you're going to allow a male to self-identify into women's sports, what you're saying is you're going to endorse sex discrimination against women and girls in sports. That's what you're doing. And they would all, and it was the reaction that told me more than anything. They all sat down and looked at their hands. They looked down at their hands instead of saying, Linda, they could have even said something like, Linda, you have a point. But the government says we should do this. Give me some explanation. But instead they were quiet and they just looked down. And it was my moment of truth, because I figured, okay, I'm the one sitting here speaking up and I'm one of the leaders. It's either going to be me or nobody says anything. And I knew it in that instant. I had all the background. I was an athlete. I was national champion heptathlon in the 80s. I have an international certificate in coaching for the World Athletics. I have a PhD in human biology, including development of children and youth in terms of the puberty thing. I'm a coach of athletes in 17 different sports because of my sport performance profession. And I was president of a sports association. If not me, then who? Who would be the person to actually have to speak up and argue my point? And of course, they tried to make me feel, you can't believe like the shunning at coffee time after you speak up, or the cold chill that comes across the room, silence, that Linda Blade, here we go again, and she's such a bigot. It was more like that undertow. It wasn't actually overtly, although somebody did tell me, you're breaking Canadian law when you say that. If you say Alberta is going to do it differently for your association, and you're going to say if you're born male, you have to compete male, you're breaking the law. So I told them, okay, then prove to me, because I know the Charter of Rights and Freedoms says it's not permissible to discriminate on the basis of sex. Sex is one of those characteristics listed in the Charter. So I basically said to them, well, then you prove to me how in the world we're being allowed to discriminate on the basis of sex. And nobody could give me an answer. So I knew I was right, but it just seemed weird. And then people would come up to me quietly when nobody was looking and say, I agree with you, but if I said anything, I'd lose my job. It's always these people who act like, oh, you're so bad. And then they come up to you afterwards when nobody's looking, right? And all of that behavior, Sheila, just told me we're in this dystopian moment where nobody's really allowed to speak the truth, or that they sense that they aren't. And I don't know why it didn't affect me, because I knew I was right.
So why didn't you just be quiet? I know that the overwhelming majority of people out there, regardless of their politics, know that biological men have an advantage physically over women in sport. I think the overwhelming majority of people know intellectually that no number of surgical interventions would be enough to change someone's biological sex. I think people truly know that.
Yeah.
Why don't they speak up? And I guess, why were you resilient to that pressure?
I don't know. I guess it was part of it is genetics. Like I have parents who are very, very on your own, speak your truth, no matter what kind of people. And I had experiences in the NC2A in my first, you know, I spent 2 years at University of Missouri on scholarship. Then I transferred partly because there was a scandal at University of Missouri where a coach was abusing girls. And I was the only one as a 19-year-old and 20-year-old who stood up and spoke up about it. And I learned early on that you have to stand your ground. I mean, that was a crazy situation where, you know, we'd be in a van because we were at Missouri, and every, you know, whether it was University of Kansas or Iowa or wherever we went, it was like a 6-hour van ride to that competition. And when I decided to come forward and speak up about how the coach was abusing the girls, of course, none of the girls wanted to pretend to be my friends because they were worried about the coach taking their scholarship away. And so they pretended like they hated me. And then, you know, I'd be on a 6-hour van ride where nobody would talk to me. And I went, and that yet privately, I knew they so appreciated what I was doing. But when I finally went to University of Maryland, within about 2 months after I started in the new school, this coach got fired. And then I had letters from countless girls on my team saying, I can't thank you enough for what you did. So I had early on, I had a lesson about standing up for people when you have a chance. And the only reason I could speak out, Sheila, was because I was in the States as a foreign student, and they had signed a letter of intent that they couldn't yank my scholarship on a whim. So since I was the only foreign student with a full scholarship, I was somewhat protected. I had that letter of intent in my hand, so I was able, and so I did. And the other girls couldn't, because he could have yanked their funding. So I learned early on that you can feel extreme discomfort in a moment, but when you know what you see and you speak it, when you have your chance, there's going to be a great positive benefit in the long run. And so maybe experiences like that taught me something early on in life, that there are people in this world who will do wrong things, and they will gaslight everyone around them into thinking you can't say anything. But those who do will win the day. And I did. And in this case, there I am, a leader of a provincial governing body in sport. And everybody, the social pressure was shut up, shut up, shut up. And I said, no, I'm going to speak. And I have my background. I have the bona fides to do it. And I will. And I did the same thing in World Athletics in 2004 or 5. There was stuff going on, and I spoke about it on a committee, and I was promptly punted by the president of World Athletics. And I had people saying later I did the right thing. And in fact, he got arrested later on by the French authorities for some of the things he was doing. So, I mean, I don't know. It's just so one of those things that my whole life, I seem to be in this position where I'm tested that way and I have to say something. So this isn't my first rodeo.
Yeah. Now, what sort of professional consequences have you faced this last time you've been speaking out about the wrong before you?
Nothing.
Good.
Good. That's why I should do it.
Exactly.
I mean, seriously, like, the imagination people have that they're going to suffer, and then some people really have, like April Hutchinson got suspended. That's why I admire her so much. For some reason, every time I speak out and I feel like I'm being vulnerable, I don't know, for some reason, nothing much happened. I mean, I guess I made the assessment that I am a private consultant in sports, so I have my own business. So if anybody's going to fire me, it would be one of my clients who's hired me to help them be better at sport. Like a hockey player, I could take hockey players and teach them how to skate faster by teaching them how to run faster, because it's all, you know, RPMs around the hip joint. If I can teach a hockey player how to move faster, and he's asked me to do that, then, you know, if suddenly he says to me, well, I hate your bigoted point of view and I don't want you coaching me anymore, I'll say, well, good luck to you. Okay, next client, step right up. Like, like to me, it wasn't like I was ever going to get fired in that sense. Right? So I just felt like I wasn't really very vulnerable.
So I want to ask you, because one of the things that we heard from the crowd in Lloydminster over the weekend was, where are the men? And I think April rightly retorted, well, also, I get a lot of heat from the women, too.
Yeah.
There's this strange dynamic where men have been told, I think, through modern feminism, that chivalry should be dead. And so it's dead. A lot of modern feminists got what they asked for. But a lot of women are the enablers of this complete and total reality denial. And for me, on the outside looking in, I see there's a lot of people telling women to shut up, which is a tale as old as time.
Yeah. Well, it is fascinating because I made the point about how, for example, Matt Walsh had the wonderful movie, What is a Woman? It was brilliant. It was like, wow, you know, it's everything you want to see in terms of exposing this lie. But at the same time, Matt Walsh didn't really interview people like Posey Parker and Megan Murphy, the women who had been fighting, who had been making the exact same arguments he made like 6 years before him. So there was no acknowledgement that those kinds of feminists had been speaking out and had been doing the hard work behind the scenes. But then when men and like when it went big time and the movie is well received and popular, then all the men on the, for example, sort of center to the right say, where are all the feminists? And that question is kind of bizarre to me because feminism isn't one big blob.
Right. You know,
it's not like we all have a hive mind where we all speak the same thing and that no women are fighting for this. I mean, I'm being called a feminist. Mind you, when I was growing up, being a feminist was the last thing on my mind. I just wanted to compete and coach. And it was only entering this fight that I realized that some feminists have a good point and I want to help them make that argument. And so now I'm being called a feminist and I don't mind that. It's just that I don't even know what that word really means. I mean, people say, well, if you're in favor of women's rights, then you're a feminist. Yeah, but there's intersectional feminists, third wavers and beyond, who really believe that allowing men and women's sports, this is the way we can show the world that men and women are equal. When it's showing exactly the opposite, it's showing men and women are distinctly different. And yet you have the radical feminist, meaning the original. Radical doesn't mean far left in this case. Radical feminist, when you use that word, it just means the original feminist, like wave one, which was the right to vote. Second wave, the equal pay for equal work. Like the sensible feminists are the radical, are called radical feminists. And they all believe, and they've been fighting. They are the ones like Megan Murphy and Posey Parker doesn't say she's a feminist at all. But I mean, I'm just saying there's this whole sector of women that are indeed fighting hard. Like look at Riley Gaines. So when some guy says, well, where are all the feminists? I right away think to myself, are you not seeing Riley Gaines? Okay, she doesn't say she's a feminist, but she's making the same arguments as the radical feminists. So it's a little bit too simplistic to say, where are all the feminists? Like, we're all distinct, just like it would be like saying, we're all the men. There's some really strong men in this fight, you know, really, really important people, whether they're senators, whether they're Matt Walsh, whether they're whoever. There's, you know, like Graham Linehan, there's in the UK, there's so many men who have stood up and even them paid the price for speaking up about women's rights to sports, to fairness, to sex-based rights. And I just think that, I think one of the things about intersectional feminists, the more modern ones who want to allow men and women's sports, they don't watch sports at all. I think most of them don't even know anything about sport. Like they aren't the ones reading sports section in the newspaper. They're just using sport as their template for social reform without understanding. Because I've heard a lot of women say when I've watched their programs and they go, well, yeah, but we know that if a man just takes the right hormones, it'll all be the same. They don't understand. The science does not prove that at all. Science doesn't prove it. There's not the science. Science All the investigations to date show that when you take a man and you start reducing his testosterone and putting in estrogen in the system, it does not diminish his competitive advantage in sport. There've been 19 studies so far showing that. And yet, you know, here comes along an intersectional feminist of that variety saying, well, no, everything's being equalized when he takes a hormone, as if women are just a lower, like women are just men with lower testosterone. Like, that is just not true. We're just completely different designs. And it's so that those are the people, the guys on the left, then tell, you know, the trans activists, they'll say, isn't it a little bit sexist of you to say that allowing a man into women's sports will cause women to lose their play? Isn't that saying men are better than women? No, it does not say that. It's the same thing. I use the analogy all the time. In men, all they have to think is even men's sports or like race car, for example, Formula One cars have their own race. NASCARs have their own race. Why? They're all cars. They all have four wheels. They're all because they're different design. And if you went to the Southern United States and you were at a NASCAR race and somebody suddenly decided to field a Formula One car in that, every guy in there would have a conniption that you have the wrong model in the wrong race. Women and men are two different models. It's not like ones are worse than the other or the, and if you put them together, yes, the male will more than likely beat the female. Doesn't mean we're any less. We're a different category, a different design of vehicle in a different race. And that's what's important. And that's what's interesting in its own right. When we saw the NCAA women's final, like, you know, 18 million people more than watched the Stanley Cup, watched the Caitlin Clark and you know, in the final of the NCAA with a peak showing of rating of 24 million people. What was compelling about that game? It's all women. You're just saying the best women are competing against each other and it's a compelling competition.
Right.
We didn't say, oh, they're not men, so it's not that interesting. You know, they're just the different category. And yet intersectional feminists and the men on the far left who never watch sports either probably try to gaslight us. And, yeah. They don't, I call it progressive misogyny. They're progressive left, far left, and they're worse misogynists than anything we've ever seen from the far right, as far as I'm concerned. And they just they're speaking out without understanding the reality of sport.
It's true. And, you know, even if I concede the battleground that women being a woman is just a feeling, it doesn't change the biology of it all, but I don't even want to concede that argument because if somebody asked me what it feels like to be a woman, I could not articulate that because it is my state of being. So when a man who wants to identify as a woman says, well, I feel like a woman. How do you know? How do you know if I don't know what that state of reality feels like for myself?
How does a zebra feel like being a zebra, says the horse with no stripes? Like, right. Okay. And if that horse paints stripes on his body, does that make him a zebra? No, he still feels like a horse. Like, I don't know. To me, the biological reality hits me every time. And I just think, what are you even talking about? Like, I think literally we have a generation or two of people who've never stepped outside and lived in the biosphere, or they do live in a biosphere, but everything in their life has been artificial. So you play a video game and you can pretend to have an avatar that's something else and as if that's reality. And it's not.
Oh, that's an excellent point. It's an excellent point. It's true. A lot of people who are making these arguments that men can be women just by virtue of announcing it, like Michael Scott on The Office when he declared bankruptcy. I declare bankruptcy. Every time I see that, it reminds me of that. But it's true. Yeah. These are kids who have never actually thought about what it means to be real, like
it's a real human being, be outside. Like the kids, farm kids, I don't think are, you don't see a lot of kids who are carrying water and baling the hay having any question about who they are.
Isn't that the truth? Because they're not disconnected from the natural order of things.
I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, I do too. You raised an interesting point in your speech in Lloydminster, and I just want to hear one more time because it's very compelling. Okay. That by protecting women's sports, you're also protecting trans people in sport.
Yes.
And I think I'll that's explain. A point that's never been made before.
Yes, I'll explain. So there's two, sex is binary, you're born male or female, and you can't be trans unless you're born one way and transition to something else. So the very fact of calling somebody trans means that you acknowledge you were born one way and you want to, So there are people born male who want to become women. So there's male born trans people and there's female born trans people. Now the female born trans, or now people who call themselves non-binary, but they're female born, they stay in women's sports. We already accept them. We already have those trans in our sports. You never hear about them because they're female and they're in women's sports. They're the tomboys. And basically, so all I'm saying is if you then take the men who are trans, guys born male who now identify as women, and you throw them into women's sports, those trans who are male are literally discriminating against the trans who are female.
Right.
And non-binary, as well as everybody else there. So it's actually, they're the ones being transphobic because they're the ones inserting somebody in another category in a way that hurts another trans person and discriminates against them on the basis of sex. Because sex, they say, they're the ones who say sex and gender are two different things. So if they're a certain gender and that gender discriminates on the basis of sex, it's still hurting another trans person. Anyway, I'm making it too complicated. It's that men who come over and want to be women are actually discriminating against the trans who happen to be born female, who have stayed in women's sports, by and large. And that raises another question. If the women, if the female athletes accept the trans and non-binary in their midst, why are we even doing this? Why can't the men simply accept the male athletes who are trans in their midst? Why is this crossover even a thing? Like we, in sport, we never, for example, cared if what your religion was, whether you belong to a certain political party, whatever your ideology. In sport, we have always had the luxury of putting personal beliefs aside and just running your race with your body, with the body you were born with and sex-based guidelines according to your biological sex. But suddenly there's this special group of men who think that they could come over because they just don't feel comfortable with their fellow, they don't get the affirmation with their fellow men. And so they're seeking extra affirmation, which the female trans that almost never demand. So it becomes this another way, it's the 2024 version of the 1950s, where once again, the male population is forcing women and girls to deal with their problem.
Yep.
It's just as misogynistic as anything ever happened before, but now we're supposed to celebrate it. These glamorous men coming into women's sports and profiling themselves. Yeah. And so when I think about it, then you go and say to the men who are athletes, you know, I am with men all the time in sports, of course, because I coach a lot of males. Why wouldn't you just accept a person who, let's say a man wants to identify as a woman, why can't you just accept that guy in your race? And all of them tell me, we're ready. We want to accept that guy.
Yeah.
It's the trans who are male who are insisting they must come to the women in order to affirm their identity. So we're listening to a really small sector of just men who are insisting on parading themselves into women's sports and using women's sports, get this, as a method of social therapy. They're using female sport for social therapy. That's all this is.
Yeah,
and I saw that right from square one. And I said, why? Leave sports out of this. Do your own thing over there with the guys. They'll accept you.
Yeah, we've gone from a certain subset of men, you know, half a century ago, telling us there were things that we couldn't do and we had to stick to ourselves. So we kind of did in some aspects. Mm-hmm. And now we have another subset of men coming along and saying, that they're better than us at our own things. It's misogyny.
Or even more than that. Yeah, it's pure misogyny, and it's actually more than that, Sheila. It's a subset of men who think their rights supersede the rights of women and girls to fairness.
Right.
And if then I noticed in that case in Australia, the Tickle versus Giggle trial, the man who's trying to get into women's spaces, he's saying, well, I just didn't feel comfortable. Like the men's locker room and bathrooms feel stinky and smelly. And yeah, so now you want to come into our bathrooms and make our bathrooms stinky and smelly and unsafe. Oh, how convenient of you to come over to our side as a male and now bring that all over to us. Because the minute he's allowed into women's spaces, so is the next guy, whether he's really trans or not. So is the next predator who decides he wants to just use social therapy as his, you know, his gate to come in. If you don't have complete protection of the female space, that's what's going to happen. There's no exceptions.
There's an absolute selfishness and self-narcissism. I was going to say self-indulgent narcissism in this, that certain people think they can bend biological reality to their own thoughts and feelings, and that women and girls should be forced to affirm their choices at the expense of the opportunities of the women and the safety and comfort of the women and girls. It is narcissism.
Yes. And in fact, using the entire female space, almost it's like they never really even ever acknowledged that possibility. You know, if you notice, if you listen to them speaking, I went to a rally at the legislature last Wednesday, that pro-trans and sports rally. Not one time did they mention women's sports. It's like, it's this background of, you know, it's like this white background upon which the rainbow people can draw their story. Like it's, they don't even acknowledge that there is any such thing as women's rights or a woman's need to have her own sport. Even amongst the females who are talking about trans and sport, they're all staying in women's sports. Every single person who was speaking there as an athlete was a female athlete. And even one acknowledged, I've been really lucky. I've been fully accepted in women's sports. Yeah, of course you have, because that's what we do.
Right.
But she didn't say women's sports. She said, I've been fully accepted by my teammates. She never said... Not one time in that whole rally was the word woman's sport mentioned. And that's my point. They have to keep us sort of this background, dark matter, white chalkboard, whatever you want to say, that they can write their story on without acknowledging the other individuals in women's sports. That's the only way they can justify their explanation or their trespassing into the female category.
Now, do you think the tide is turning? I think Danielle Smith is right now a political outlier in action, in action, but I don't think in thought. I think politics are downstream of culture, and I'm hopeful that the culture is finally changing. I think the other side overplayed their hand quite a bit. What do you think? Are things changing?
No, I really agree with you.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I agree with you completely. I'm feeling it. I'm seeing it every poll. When you do a poll, anywhere from 70 to 90% of people agree with me. Mm-hmm. They agree that you should compete on the basis of the body you were born with, on the basis of biology. Your ideology shouldn't have anything to do with women's sports. Just like always. Never, religion never mattered. Political, that like it was always men or women, right? So I think Danielle Smith is only the first politician to pick up on it. And if they're very honest with themselves, whether it's NDP, UCP, or federally, NDP, Liberal, Conservative, if they do their own polling, honestly, they will see that if some 80% of the Canadian public is not on board with gender ideology in terms of, you know, men and women's sports and all that, as far, if it depends how you ask the question. If you think that everybody should be respected for their unique personality or identity, of course we all do. But what it means in practical terms, as far as inserting another kind of person or allowing people to jump categories, whether that's jumping from men's male category to female category in sports, or now we see it jumping age categories. So identifying as a little girl, like a 50-year-old man identifying as a little girl. So he's jumping the sex category and jumping the age category. I mean, can you imagine an NHL player self-identifying as a 12-year-old? It's just so ridiculous. Like, come on. Like, they pushed it, Sheila. They have pushed it so far, and they've become so ridiculous. They've made it obvious for the public. Once you start paying attention to it, they've made it pretty obvious to Canadians that they're not right, that they're on the wrong side of history, very clearly. And it's just going to be one of those fads where we say, that was so 2020s.
Yeah, it's going to be like the satanic panic of the 2020s, where we realize, oh my goodness, we were swept into madness and people nearly went to jail over because they misgendered somebody. I think we are going to look back with the clarity of hindsight and think, what a crazy time the 2020s
it's
were.
It's really crazy. Yeah, thanks to Trudeau. And the sooner he can go on, the better. I'm sorry, I'm speaking from my own heart, but
let's go.
That man has done more damage in terms of allowing the people with this ideology to push him around to do all their bidding and legislation. I don't even think he believes it, frankly.
No, I don't think so either. I think Trudeau's only ideology is power. And I think he only believes in power because he is entitled and he thinks it's his birthright. I don't think he even wants to lead the country. He just wants to be the most powerful man in it.
Well, he said he's a little bit bored and I mean, he doesn't want to pay attention. Please move on. We need to move on from this crazy business. Like, I don't know. I think it's just the people using him to, you know, like the worst of the progressive misogynists using Trudeau for their own ends. And it's going to be the ruin of the Liberal Party and NDP. I mean, seriously, if they keep going down this track, can't they see how they're dropping in the poll? I don't know. I just feel like it's just, we're so close to being done with this.
From your lips to God's ears, Linda.
You know,
and you know, somebody asked Ralph Klein once what his, like, the secret to his political success was.
Yeah.
And he said, show me the parade that's marching and I'll jump in front of it and lead it.
Sure.
Politicians out there, this parade is marching. Don't let Danielle Smith be the only person leading it. Jump in front of it. It's marching. It could be your political success.
It's the next wave of politics, I'm telling you. Yeah. And if you want to be ahead of it, jump in front now because it's coming fast. The wave is coming in. It's a big tsunami coming and you better get ahead of it.
Well, and it spans ideologies. So, and people whom you wouldn't normally think would get along with each other. We saw this during the parents' rights marches all across the country. You can go to those things and think, you know, people would probably cross the street to avoid walking on the same side of the street as each other.
Yeah.
But they're united in defense of their children. They don't want their children sexualized by activist teachers in the classroom. And so it was people from all walks of the political life, Christians, right-wingers, social conservatives, Muslims, new Canadians, Sikhs, Indo Canadians, Chinese immigrants. Everybody was saying, just leave the little ones alone. I think this is an issue just like that, where it doesn't even matter where you fall down on the political spectrum. Reality is a thing that doesn't really have politics attached to it.
Turns out they all have children and they know exactly where they came from. There's not a single person in Canada. I had a CPR course during COVID and the instructor was great. He was an ex EMS guy, but all of a sudden, like, he was very woke. And all of a sudden he said in the middle of our course, because he was talking about how to palpate for the breast, like a male, like when you're doing the heart pump thing, how you treat a female body, a male. Oh, and by the way, he says, there's actually more than one gender, you know, and he gave it, or the two genders, you know, and he gave a smirk smile and leaned up against the blackboard. And he goes, like, there's male, female, and those in between. And I had to challenge it. I mean, I'm sitting there.
You can.
Oh man, he melted down. He went right to the racist card. You're so racist. Like I didn't even say anything about race. He said, I think this warrants a 15-minute break so we can all cool down. Like, I didn't need the break. He's the one that needed the break.
Yeah.
So I mean, the thing is, but I said to him in that argument, listen, there's not a single person in Canada. Show me one person in Canada that has been born other than the union of a man and a woman, other right. than male. There's a male gamete. There's a sperm and an egg. There's no spag. There's nothing in between. So, oh boy, that made him mad. But you know what? Hey, you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
You know, you got to call it out. And all those parents marching on, I think that was September 20 last yeah. year.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing turnout. And they are all people that know exactly where children come from. Exactly. They all know that there's a man and a woman, and that's what it takes to create a new human being, a new Canadian. And we're just not going to be fooled anymore by this stupid sort of gaslighting all the time.
Now, Linda, where can people find the important work that you're doing? Because you're in a bunch of different places. You've got a book, Unsporting, which I'll put a link to the book sure. in the description of this video. But where else can people find you?
Well, I think they should just read the book.
Yes.
And then they can find me at Coach Blade on Twitter. Those are my sort of outlets. I am moving out of the country soon for a different thing, contract overseas, helping the United Nations with an agriculture program with my husband. So, I mean, I'm not going to be in country too much longer, but I'll never stop being Coach Blade on Twitter as long as I'm there, unless I get kicked off for some reason. I haven't been, and all this time, magically, it's never happened. Read the book, Unsporting. I think it'll explain a lot, and it'll help you get on board with what's been happening in Canada.
Well, Linda, I appreciate so much just how outspoken you are and how firm you are in your defense of reality, and just the important work that you do on behalf of our sisters and our friends and our daughters. From my family to yours, I just can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Sheila. I appreciate it. Yeah. Well, I appreciate your support and the opportunity, giving me the opportunity to just speak my mind, obviously. Let's hope Daniel Smith, other premiers, I think this battle can really be won on the ground, at ground level. And I think that's where it should be fought. So,
yeah.
Well, yeah, let's go.
And Daniel Smith is, I mean, all the arrows are pointed at her right now. The mainstream right. media, the progressives, the activists, they're all pointing their arrows at her. Let us hope she does not falter.
Well, she will try to find maybe a middle ground on some areas, but I think we need to be very strong in supporting her and giving her clear insight as to where to go next, because she is under attack. And please support those politicians. Anybody who's listening out here, when the next politician steps up, please support them, because it is a very vulnerable time, even though they will be the heroes in the long run. So hang in there, Daniel Smith. Hang in there, Mr. Higgs and Premier Mo, like all those people who are standing up. Keep going, because you're on the right track.
Perfect. I'm going to stop recording right there. That was a perfect spot to leave it. We've come to the portion of the show wherein we invite your viewer feedback. I'll give you my email address right now. It's Sheila@rebelnews.com. If you've got something to say about Coach Linda Blade's interview today, put gun show letters in the subject line and put it into my email inbox. But don't let that be the bar for entry. Maybe you don't want to send me an email. Maybe you're watching the free, later released version of the show, be it on YouTube or on Rumble, and you sat through a couple of ads to get access to the show. I appreciate you for that. You know, I realize Justin Trudeau is picking your pocket harder than ever, and maybe a paywall premium subscription is not in your budget. So I do hope that we are making the show as accessible to you as possible. So it's on YouTube, it's on Rumble. If you don't want to watch me, because I'm not for everybody, and just want to listen to me, you can also do that on any number of the podcast platforms. So let me know what you thought about the show. Leave me a comment on YouTube, Rumble, drop me an email, let me know, because I think you're going to have a lot to say about Coach Linda. I'm recording this fresh off the interview with her. I haven't seen the fully produced version of our interview as I'm saying these words, and my head is still swirling around with her arguments about men participating in women's sports, because she comes at it from a scientist's mind. She's a kinesiologist and an athlete. She's walked all over this issue. She's a woman. She was a trailblazer in her sport when nobody even cared about women's sports. And now she's seeing women's sports being snatched away from the very women who worked so hard to build them. So I'm sure you'll have a lot to say. I have a lot to think about myself. Now, today's gun show letter comes from the email inbox, and it comes on a show I filmed 2 weeks ago with my friend Tom Harris from the International Climate Science Coalition. That man has a soothing voice, by the way. If you're listening to the podcast version of the show, he is such a cool cucumber, and his voice has that certain tone that even when he's talking about things that we should all find very stressful, and we should, you know, the government is taxing us to change the weather, his reasoned approach and the tone of his voice convinces me that we are truly winning. You know, that and his reasonable arguments that he's making. Anyways, Tom's, the whole crux of Tom's show was that we should not concede the language to the other side. We shouldn't concede the language of climate change to the left. We shouldn't be calling it carbon pollution. We should not be calling the carbon tax a price on pollution, because carbon dioxide is not pollution. It's plant food. Everybody knows that. Even the left knows that. Because for them, I mean, even they know that taxing you won't change the weather. Taxing you will make you poorer and transfer your money to someone else. That's all that's happening here. It's the whole watermelon syndrome. There's green on the outside, but they're red like commies on the inside. It's all the same agenda. Steve writes to me, "Hi, Sheila. Enjoy your show. As someone from Ontario, it would be nice to discuss it as well, but I understand the focus on Alberta. It really does take a beating when it comes to the federal government. The reason I focus on Alberta when I talk about the federal attacks through climate change is that it's one of two, the oil and gas sector, one of our two key industries here, the other one being agriculture, and they're both under attack for the same reason, climate change. So oil and gas, you know, we've got emissions caps, carbon taxes, the Impact Assessment Agency blocking our oil and gas infrastructure. And then we've got the carbon tax, how it affects farmers. And farmers are price takers, not price setters. So a lot of those additional input costs we cannot pass along to the consumer, because it is what it is. You know, if you're a grain farmer, you sell your grain into the world market for the price that day. And the world market doesn't care that you had to pay more for grain drying because of Justin Trudeau's carbon tax. So that's why I talk a lot about Alberta when I talk about bad climate change ideas, because we are just hammered from the left and the right, and not politically speaking, I mean from all sides on the issue. And it's, you know, frankly, I'm going to be honest with you, it's one, I have a foot in both of those worlds, so that's why I talk about them, because I am a farmer, my family's in the oil patch, so that's why. So thank you for your patience with me as I evangelize Alberta to the rest of the country. Anyway, I listened to the climate change episode where it was discussed what federal conservatives should do to change the narrative. One thing I always find interesting is no one speaks about the real science. Well, Tom does. From my research, it is agreed by all sides that CO2 levels follow temperature. I heard that too. I've seen that at Friends of Science presentations where they have geoscientists talking about the levels of CO2 in the atmosphere based on the geological record and the fossil record that shows that CO2 levels follow the rise in temperature, not the other way around, which is the way that the liberals would have us believe. In studies from thousands of ice core samples, it has been proven in peer review that the temperature rises and then it takes the CO2 levels up to 1,000 years to start to rise. A scientist then tried to dispute this study and decided that it is not 1,000 years, but could be as low as 50 years. Somehow thinking this would prove CO2 causes temperature rise, but all he did was verify CO2 is not the cause of the rise of temperature. Anyway, I could go on and on, but the reality is CO2 is only 0.04% of our atmosphere. Keep up the great work, Steve. Yeah, it is crazy how just like the statistical rounding error fraction of our atmosphere has become the great green boogeyman. But as I said, it's really not about CO2 at all. It's about a tax that is ubiquitous, that touches everything in our lives, which will control everything in our lives and take more money from our pockets so that the liberals can just sprinkle it around everywhere else. It's a big wealth transfer. And if you attach it to the atmosphere, then you've truly, truly attached it to everything. And if you'd like to sign our petition against Justin Trudeau's tax on everything, go to stopthecarbontax.com. Well, everybody, that's the show for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see everybody back here in the same time, in the same place next week. And as always, don't let the government tell you that you've had too much to think.